Hello there, and welcome to Storm's Herald, a Check These Out D&D 5e 4-part mini-campaign set in the world of Terra Luno. Macca is the Dungeon Master for this series, and is joined by me, Josh, from Check These Out. We are also joined by special guests Nathan from Reckless Attack, Danny Hurt from Twitch, Kayla, or Time Lord's Wife, and Rebecca from Roll Together RPG. Check out our live streams on Mondays and Tuesdays at 9 p.m. UK time and Fridays at 7 p.m. UK time at twitch.tv/checkthiseout. You can also find us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube by searching Check These Out. Now on with the session.
Kalem is a floating continent made up of many islands, and it's always travelling around the world of Terra Illuno, keeping mainly to the oceans so as not to cause destruction on the land. There's always tumultuous tornadoes and winds that go underneath Kalem to keep it afloat. No one really remembers how it came to float, but legends from the Dwarven epics tell of how the original Lord Stormkirk made a pact with Cirrus the Sky Dragon to lift the continent above the ground to escape from the scourge of the anti-magic Terpic Empire. Kalem is ruled by Sky Dwarfs under the leadership of one always named Lord, Lady, or Leader Stormkirk. They manage trade with the Lowlanders, and with their airships fueled by a single scale from Cirrus, they dominate the skies. From their elevated position, they look down upon the Lowlanders in many ways. Lord Stormkirk commands absolute power and is revered almost like a living deity. Judgment is swift and punishment is harsh on Kalem. There are, however, many elven sky pirates up here looking to eke out a living on the outskirts where the larger, cumbersome dwarven ships dare not fly. In the forests of the Greylands to the north, animalistic shifters rule. And storms, despite the namesake of the kingdom, are a deadly occurrence, and when a thunder dragon crosses the path of Kalem, it can be catastrophic. The winged dragonborn of the Bolton Arc, under the rule of Tyrannus the Thunder Dragon from the Storm Citadel, take advantage of this and raid the kingdom during these times. However, this is where the Vanes come in, an ancient group of wooden golems created by Cirrus the Sky Dragon. Each one has a single piece of a single scale from Tyrannus the Thunder Dragon, the floating continent's greatest threat. And that's what powers the Vane. And when Tyrannus and the Storm Draconics enter a course that will eventually collide with Kalem, the Vanes awaken. Over millennia, and through many wars and high winds, all of them were defeated, lost, or otherwise became inactive. They've long been thought a legend, certainly unseen from living memory, for all but the oldest of beings. And with those legends nothing more than bedtime stories now, we start our story. The birds are tweeting their morning chorus. The winds are blowing the tweed. The winds are blowing the trees. The winds are blowing the trees with a gale from the stubborn leaves, used to this onslaught as they cling onto the warped branches. With a sudden spark of static purple energy, the birds are startled and take flight, soaring away with the winds. At first, your fingertips move, then your arms, but everything is still dark, cold, and wet. And as you press into the soft, wet earth of the forest and push yourself from it, you realize you've been lying face down under a thick carpet of moss, possibly a very long time. In this small clearing, you can see what would have once been wooden seats, now taken back by the forest. However, you're awake. And this means one thing. Tyrannus the Storm Dragon is close. You can feel the single scale fragment inside you, quietly brimming with purple static energy, and it's keeping you moving. However, as you take your first steps and the movement of these old joints, you realize there's something missing. You cannot detect distance from the direction of Tyrannus the Storm Dragon. This is because your stars, deep sea, all you know
something into it, pauses for a moment, and then releases it and studies it, studies its movement, how the wind takes it, clearly gets some sort of answer from it. It takes a few steady beats. It says, the storm is near. It walks over to a nearby tree, and extends its hand, presses up against it, and saying an ancient word of power, a flash of the same purple light, and now instead of a tree, this wooden construct is now holding a strange, gnarled wooden staff. And it looks, it kind of turns into the direction that the audience would know is the direction that this creature needs to go. And says, and then, you know, once again, thinks about the missing orb. Says out loud,
would you like to describe what Solar sees as he looks upon you traveling along the road?
You'd see a young, you can't quite tell the race because the skin is of a purplish blue, but they have pointed ears with short cropped white hair. It's cut very, very short to the sides. And you see that there is a long bow swung around her shoulder, the long sword to the side, and it seems as if she's questioning these sky dwarves. She's in deep conversation with them, back and forth, and she's walking away towards you. I don't know how close he would be and if he'd be able to overhear the conversation.
Well, Sola, you are basically invisible in the forest. You can see the storm's head. These other two sky dwarves approaching.
Take a closer look at his appearance. How are the dwarves reacting?
They're both very confused. Both dwarves are like, "He's talking." Did it again.
You look like a tree. You also look like a tree.
That is true. Please, we have no time to waste. I need to go see the leader Stormbird.
Would I know of Stormbird, given I'm not traveling in this area now?
Lord Stormbird is actually the person that controls all the Storm Tower. If you want, you do. So you would 100% know exactly who Lord Stormbird is. You may have never seen them or met them, but you know who they are.
The storm is near.
And I would also, of course, know what he means by storm. because I'm a traveler in this area, and I've simply been going around quite nomadically, picking up rumors and tales here and there. So I understand that these storms are dangerous, and with that, I'll look to the dwarves. I don't really have good connections with Stormkirk. If by any means you're able to get this person to him, why exactly do you need to see him?
The storm is coming. It is the duty and to ensure that the leader is prepared for it, appropriately advised.
Understood. Do you have a name? I don't want to call you an object.
Why don't we call him the tree wound of tree?
Telling the truth, and they are just saying, I just need to go there, but make sure I'm going the right way. I'm a little, you know, confused, but as long as we're going the right way, we'll all get there together safe, no problem.
Look, I'm gonna trust you till I don't, and with that, let's just make it to Stormkirk and see what he has to say about this. As I'm sitting there, kind of rubbing my fingers together, looking at him, and
This is agreeable.
The two dwarves kind of look at Solar. You may want to, you know, cover yourself a little bit. The people of Orkhart are likely to give you a lot of stares.
Why?
It's best I don't say. You might, you know, become panicked.
I have all confidence that once I arrive, the leader will ensure that I get all the supplies that I need. Thank you for your concern.
Right. Let's head back the way we came then. And you know your journey is going to take you through the streets. This is for the next way. It's a restful little trading town not far from the farmlands of Waterdale. And the rich hunting grounds are bound to Waterdale from where Solar. Center of town, you can see a circle of five other veins. shielding their faces as if they're fire dragons.
Is Nathan to understand that this is in reference to the final moments that he remembers, or just things that we pass?
These are five things just like you that you may recognize even, but they are certainly frozen in fear and terror, and they've been frozen in that state for time immemorial, and now little more than statues in this town.
Solar Alacrity would go up to each of them, regardless of, to an extent, of whatever momentum the group has, but would, you know, stride out ahead of everyone and make sure to catch up afterward. But at each of them would stop, pick up a little bit of dirt or mud or something like that, rub it on their foreheads or on their chests, actually on their chests probably, and say something.
Just booked it right out of that tavern there, running out. You'll see a relatively young half elf. You can see his pointed ears. His hair is up into a more of a like a top knot. He has a very magnificent rapier at his side, and he is supporting some studded leather armor. As he's running out, he's gonna turn and yell back and just put it on my tab. I'll get you next time. And I'm sure as soon as he runs out, I would take note of everything around him and maybe even almost run into the group that is walking by. And my eyes are just kind of widen a little bit. What are you? As I look over at Solar.
The Sky Dwarves, you've seen us lots, Josiah.
Not you, my friends, you. And then I'm gonna look over directly to Solar. Aren't you magnificent? Hello.
Very kind. Hello. I am a maid. Did I hear correctly? You are also a servant, a group, whatever the proper and used first word would be, correct word to be, of a leader Stormherald.
I am a Storm Herald. I have trained under them for a period of time, but why do you ask?
We are allies. I am Solar Alacrity.
Yeah,
I'm here
he's
to
just
tell...
been... He's
I'm
just
here
been
to tell...
like that since I found him in the forest.
The leader, that the storm is coming.
You just found him like this? We normally don't see him move.
He kind of found me somehow. Is this where you come from? Solar, and as I point to the other veins that you passed by.
What are you doing here now?
saying that there are no more, that you have not seen any other veins?
Yeah, personally, no. You are but stories that I heard of as a child. Seeing him like this has Josiah a little befuddled.
Yeah. It would be like us literally meeting a bedtime story that had come to life. So yeah, that's probably exactly the reaction you would have. And it's not uncommon for Storm's Heralds to spend time apart because the way you were trained and the brutal way you had to face the storms, they don't like being around each other that much. To action by Lord Stormcloak, whose word is absolute. Other than that, they do maybe spend some time apart. So there is anything you'd like to ask your companions, or would you just stop it?
I think how long are we, is this journey? Several days.
Yes.
Okay. So a couple things. They definitely would be very interested in me. Also, you would see very frequently as we're going, Solar Alacrity will do all kinds of kind of strange things with dirt, with sticks, with rocks, with bones if he finds them. Actually, we're probably, if he found this one, the bones would pick up.
Jothadiah would normally be a person that isn't too secret about his abilities or anything. He's very confident in his abilities, like kind of borderline on like that arrogance, but it's like he has kind eyes though, so it's like very easy to like. So it's like he would display some of his magic in showing of why he was chosen to be a Storm Herald and when he was kind of swept away from his family way back in the day. So at some point during their act, he would probably do a display of magic and kind of cast something like a storm sphere and create kind of a storm and lightning and then dispel it.
By utilizing her skill, I mean,
the Nakuma Tom, is a well-known and well-respected member of the Stormcat military. Matilda Penwistle. She is the first mate on the Nakuma Tom, and of great military pedigree, albeit known as a descendant of the Turkic Empire. Rebecca, how do you look as Solar Tempest and Jozadiah see you coming off the gangway of the Nakuma Tom?
I think your first impression would be a moment of cognitive dissonance, because you'd look at her and be like, school teacher, headmistress. And then, but no, she's on a, no, okay. And it takes a second for the slightly fussy, frilly collar, the very neat coat, the very carefully scraped back hair to make sense with the fact that you see, instead of holding chalk, she has a whip. The people she is bossing about are not unruly schoolgirls, but are quite a lot of quite ferocious looking fighters and competent people. And she looks not exactly stressed, but she's definitely competent and has everything under control, but is busy.
Yes, and that's how Solar Tempest knows about it. That's how you see it. Someone very well respected in the country of the Storm Cats. And
storm's coming?
The storm is coming.
A tempest, good to see you. Didn't think you'd be passing this way so soon. You, who are you?
Me. So today I have...
Yes, I've heard. Oh, what do you need?
I'm with... them? The storm's coming, haven't you heard?
We need to get to Stormkirk. I figured you'd probably be a better option, or you or Josiah, getting in there.
I have a ship. I can check with the captain, but if the Stormkirk calls, then we go, so... shouldn't be a problem. How are you, Evain? Notices anything out of place as she goes, you tighten that. No, that's not good enough. Do it again. Just as she goes.
These frantic sort of kobolds running around like crazy underneath, just fixing things. These like kobolds that seemingly are white, but they're not cold. They're just like exuding steam and smoke and cloud. And they seem to be just Cirrus's followers. Like, yes, yes, of course. It's the teeming all over it. But soon, you probably decide that it's best to seek out Advisor Tawny, the Archmage of Caelum, and the personal advisor to Lord Stormkirk. So taking Tempest and Josiah, you head into the grand banquet hall with its tall ceilings and polished rock-hewn pillars. There is a large fireplace at the back, behind Advisor Tawny, an aged, grey-haired dwarf with long tattered robes and a big staff carved into the shape of an outstretched owl at the top. As you walk towards him, your footsteps echo and ring out. Eventually, he looks up at his patterns, maps, charts, and gasps. You're Evain! How are you, Evain?
Everybody keeps saying it! I'm gonna take a drink for every time somebody says that.
Where is Taranis? How long till they make landfall upon us?
He asked the name.
It is an end. Solar Lafferty almost is not happy to say this, what they're about to say. But it says, I do not know. I do not know.
Stains on the floor. There's a big brown stain around the entrance of the doorway. That was from the last people that knocked on the door before they were summoned.
So
quite a personal question.
And I'm not asking him about his particulars. I don't want to know why he can't tell when the storms are coming.
I am missing my orb of stars. Are you familiar?
Yes. Of course. All of the Vians had them, and all of them were taken from them and used and sold to the Lowlands. But this is the most frightening. I know one. Shifters. You, Tempest.
I'm always having fun. She looks at the pillar. It's been a while since we've had some fun.
It's been a while.
Let's see. Well, in that case, slap the star on the ground. A small spark just like ripple out. Allow me to lift the entrance. Starts just jumping. It's almost like a requisition form. One use bomb. Do you mind if we used in the Kuma? Or should I ask the captain, or would he otherwise do?
Sorry, ask the captain, or will?
Or will your word do? Will you be okay to sign it off?
I think they'll be alright.
She's the fastest ship that will stop cut. Finds a way to purchase the lap rocket from taking the goblins. Do you have any questions?
I had a question. How diplomatic are relations currently with the shifter? How keen are you to keep them?
Well, it would certainly help if we had the shifter with us. They are very alongside us. Once they see no less than possible, if they've even seen one before. Shifters kept themselves to themselves as long as they've been here. As to warn you, they're as I said, strange.
How long's the journey there?
If you take the fastest ship, the Makuma, it'll be about 3 days. A constant flight.
To make others come.
Would you like some pants?
Yes, I will take pants.
Can we put them in like those trousers with the little sister and they're like small girls?
Don't really. You can get something.
Someone's really gonna have to change the character.
nice upgrade on the last drink.
Journeyed from Sanctum, the capital of the Lowland, as per the flag on its departure pole. And as it lets off its passengers, mainly crates of supplies and workers, as they are the only ones permitted to and from Caelan, a strange muscle-bound man drops from the port side of the airship, the far side, and scans the area around him, carefully looking for something. Josh, as the group see you, from the port side of the ship, knock down the normal gangway, what do they see when they look upon you?
First thing that you see is big, muscly, burly man, 6'5". He's got long, black hair that's tied up into a small ponytail, with the rest of it flowing down into his shoulders with brown strings. You can see that there is green, emerald-green tribal markings all over his face, adorned with scars. Numerous scars everywhere. He's not wearing an awful lot of clothing. He's got straps around his chest. His body is covered in what looks to be fur on his arms and on his shoulders. And he's wearing trousers with a purple sash. He has a large cloak on his back with fur around the shoulders and a large great sword on his back with mace on one side. He looks like a shifter. Difference is towards his shifting the mace, as he is shifting his normal. As he looks down on the ground, thinking on the inside of the post, he didn't see what he's doing. Oh shit.
That's a question. I look at Matilda.
I'm not 100% sure what it says, because I can't remember, but as far as I'm aware, this is official. are you? This is so cool.
Where's your passive perception?
It's in the, let's see, 22.
Oofed.
Okay, in that case, while you guys have been talking to Zach and seeing Zach jump off the port side of the ship, which clearly indicates that they are not on the manifesto, there sure enough was a man wearing completely black leathers with red hair and a big gun on their back, and they've just walked off with the rest of the dignitaries that have come here. And they've disappeared into a crowd somewhere else.
The issue is that I have very high insight, and so I might know that that might distract this particular individual from doing a thing we need them to do, but also, I'm not a very good liar. So, there's always an eternal struggle. But I think Zorak would say, yes, I did see you.
On the fastest airship, bar none, on this continent. Bar none, bright Maka. Mine is the fastest. In return, if you could represent us well to your people,
completely. The work for the kobolds has been finished, and the captain is stood on the gangway just talking to one of the engine guy, and you can tell that it's a half elf, and his name is Shorel, for Matilda that would know him. Shorel Rylander, his name is. He goes,
okay, where's our next destination, Tilda?
Maka, how much do I know that he would just be like, cool, requisition the ship because Stormlords, and how much would that be less of a great thing?
You've got something to ask me.
Yeah, I'm afraid it's less of an ask and more of an instruct. And a captain.
Oh, I love how direct she is sometimes. I lean over to Josadiah.
You said that out loud, Tempest.
Yes, I've seen the guys are torn in some of his old games.
Less games, more life and death. Sorry. Well, not sorry, but what do you want? Do you want to swap positions, or do you want to pop off now?
Takes off this metal piece, this pendant on his neck. Okay.
are going on a very important mission for the Lord Stormkirk. It's diplomatic, but also maybe a bit fighty. You know I can't do the talking, but keep following me in battle and you're all still alive. However, this is for the continent.
What's this ship made out of?
It's metal. It's also wood. There's wooden decking all the way along, and there's like a wooden wheelhouse at the back. And you can see that there are large sails that would catch the wind and drag it along. But it's also, it seems to be powered by nothing at all. There's no sound from the engine. It's just that it remains afloat, and there's like winds that rush around underneath it.
Then in that case, I think Solar Alacrity would be fine not getting clipped in. And then only flavor-wise would just stomp around on the wooden parts of the deck and almost like grow mini tree roots as they did and just be like almost like magnetically attached wherever they were walking.
Sorrel talks to Matilda.
Is he allowed to... No, this is his voice. Is he allowed to do that? Is he going to break our ship?
They are allowed to do whatever they like. Have you never opened a book? Do you not know who they are?
What's a book?
Oh, come on, we have our evening classes. You've been invited every week.
Oh, yes, the story time happy reads.
I prefer to call it quantum physics for beginners, but, yes, the story time happy read. Not making eye contact with Tempest. Say that was in character. Matilda's forgotten she is the captain. There's a storm coming.
Right,
with ugly nods, very solid.
Matilda has
to work on
no
that.
Charisma. None.
As the ship slowly just lifting up the sand of the wind, there's a dwarf, a sky dwarf. They're not the same as Lona. They're quite a lot taller, and they're quite a lot slender. One of them comes running. Wait, wait! And he just like overarm throws this satchel. It lands on the ship, and inside there's a few very small crystals of magical energy that would be used to fuel your pistols, Matilda. And there's like a red one and a blue one, we'll say. So one's hot, one's cold. And also there is a set of dungarees and a straw hat.
I wonder who those are for.
And it lands the ship. Safe journeys. And the ship silently reverses out from the docks. And then you begin heading off. I should actually move the token. I got that we have to the skyboard. And you'll be heading off to the Greylands to the far north. North, east, south, and west. That's quite a strange idea up here with a magnetic force. Doesn't really work, however. So, on route from the Skyforge to the Greylands. It's going to take a good few days of flight. This is not uncommon, it takes a long time to get anywhere to get in the airplanes. This is not good. First night should travel fast as well. But, it's on the second day of flight
on, Captain. Try and get us through this in one piece. And it's just the ship is listed so violently to the left as it was hit with this jet stream.
Paul, this is where I went to look for my spell lists, but I don't have any.
Would you like to make a dexterity check? Say a saving throw, actually.
Let's save. Is anyone helping me?
Yes, Captain Shirado will just say, if you do need my help, just, you know, let me know.
Please. I have some pride, but I'd rather not die, so, you know. Okay. Oh, hang on, I rolled real dice, but I should roll on...
Doesn't matter.
I rolled an 18, so plus 5 is 23.
Perfect. And so, yeah, as you're like, frantically pressing buttons and machines and doing this, it just goes down. And then, whoosh, hold the wheel, turn it against the wind, so you can see that it's still at an angle, it's still quite, like, you know, leaning, listening down towards the port side, and everyone is on the ship, kind of being like, whoa, looking down into the clouds and down into the far sea. But it seems to be drifting along like that. That's what it's traveling now. But no sooner than Tilda and Sherelle have finished the rest to steer the ship from its jet stream, one of the Skydwarfs' deck slips, lets go of the railing, and his tail slowly drags up before it goes taut as he's hanging there helpless. Before you can act, something large pink slams into him. So fast, just as a splatter of viscera and the tether breaks. And then something hits the underside of the ship. It's tilted that way. Something's firing at us. Sherelle shouts. Would anyone like to attempt to see what is happening? So as you try and get yourselves up from here over to the side, your captain's position
on the lead out of the field obviously see. Well, they at this point with the lurching of the ship and just go before Robots and he's got one for it, his eyes shut and refuses to open.
Yeah,
perfect.
I may even wrap the tether around one of his arms.
Continuing through the path. Some of them seem to be holding swans and geese in their tentacles, and it becomes clear they're just sitting there, traveling around the world with this jet stream, waiting for prey to pass through. And as they slowly start to see tentacles on the side of the ship. At this point, good rolls. Exciting. Exciting times. Right, so let's see. Solar gets a 16.
Oh.
And that Josadiah is really excited.
Just so excited.
Let me have that
first one.
yeah. So let's see. Josadiah gets a 12. What did you get out of Tempest?
Tempest is too distracted at how amazing Matilda is steering this ship. Nine.
Got ya. Same as Zach, but I'm going to put you first because you're the guest.
And
nay, nay, senor. Nay, nay. Who has the higher dex mod? Nay, nay. That's how we play this game.
What's your dex?
My dex.
I'm sure it's you, right?
15. And what's yours?
A 15 plus 2 dex mod. Dang, you want the rocks, paper, scissors for it?
Rosies!
Oh,
I rolled a 12!
Rosies, oh gosh. Here, I'll have to do physical dice. Because I rolled an 18. I will take
that.
Still first.
The guest.
Just feels more fair.
First, though.
2 out of 11. Perfect. And now I shall roll for the beasts that are trapped in the maelstrom. First, I should probably get their stats up. That would probably help, wouldn't it? And I do this every time. This is live production, ladies and gentlemen. We know what we're doing here in Check These Out. Listen to the tones of Macca as he furiously types in a creature. Do you know what? I'm just going to roll and then add the modifier after, because they might end up getting really low. And I'm the DM, so my dice are definitely going to slap me hard. 15, that's not too bad. Okay, right. In that case, this is the creatures that will go first, actually. And so, as they creep over the side of the bars that hold the ship together, you can see many tentacles are sort of slipping over the side. And they will definitely go first. Perfect. There are four at first that crawl over. And as they do, you can see them just hunching over the sky dwarfs that are just gripping on. And you see them immediately just get paralyzed, and then the beasts list away from the ship and just let themselves get dragged away by the jet streams, holding these sky dwarfs in them. The person that is closest to them, that was leaning over, holding onto the tether to see, was Zerzadiah. And so, one of the creatures attempts to simply touch you with their barbed tentacles. I shall now roll. It's attack! A 13. Does it beat your AC, sir?
No.
No, it does not.
13 misses.
So, the creature's tentacles come sliding in, and you deftly sort of move out of the way, holding onto your tether. Maybe you run along the side of the ship, holding onto your tether. But it misses. Then, a Grell's tentacle just climb into the inside of the wheelhouse, just open up the window, and just start to slowly move inside. And you can feel the intense winds blow through pieces of the equipment that are holding, you know, would be the buttons and the machinery and the cups, you know, everything that's in there just goes, just whips up into the air and distracts you for a moment, Matilda, as the creature attempts to touch you with its tentacles. 17.
That is my AC.
So, the creature, as this whole happens, the wind flies through and these tentacles from this creature touch you. It's gonna struggle to get you through that window either way, but it's gonna try nonetheless as it attempts to prey upon you. It is not the most devastating attack roll damage-wise, but we'll see what it does. It is an 8 damage of piercing damage, but you also need to roll a con save.
Oh.
A 12. That's good. So you can feel as it touches you, it kind of stings, and for a moment there's pins and needles on your hand as one of your hands goes numb, but you've managed to just move your wrists and move your fingers and stave that off. But you know that this creature, when it touches you, it poisons you, and that poison is paralyzing, but you've been able to stave off the effects this time. But you are grappled by it as it wraps its tentacle around you. Still have full, for those that aren't aware, you still have full movement. No, if you're medium or small, you're restrained by the creature.
So can I still attack without moving if I'm restrained?
Yeah, just with disadvantage.
Okay. Great.
Great. And then simply two more, crawl over the side and attack Tempest and Zach. As they attempt to climb over.
Man, all these suckers have got strapped in.
You can just move out of the way. I'll do the first D20 will be on Tempest, the second on Zach. So that's 19 and a 23. I think that's probably going to hit both of you.
Indeed.
Okay. First damage on Tempest. is 7 points of damage plus a con save, please.
Sorry, D&D Beyond is a little slow. 15.
15. Likewise, what I just mentioned to Matilda, you feel this effect. You may not be aware of the growls, you may have heard of them, swarms of them that travel around the airships and stuff, and just prey on flying birds, but you're able to stave off its infection, its poison. And for Zach, likewise, 6 points of damage, piercing, and you must also make a con save.
13 on the con save.
There's also a pass. But both of you, because you got attacked, are also restrained by this creature as it wraps its tentacles around you. You're still luckily tethered on. And then, the final one. You thought you were safe, Sola, but no. Drawn to your magical That's energy, right. Two Grell climb over the ships and head towards you. You can see them drooling almost at the thought that they're going to be eating something magical. They can sense it on you somehow. So, two attacks. A 22 and an 18.
The first one hits, the second one does not.
The one that does not just whisks off with the wind and misses and carries on traveling. But this one will get a chance to hit you. For 7 points of damage, plus a con save. Can you be poisoned?
I can, I just have advantage against saves against poison. So con save you said, right?
Yes, please.
Really wish this had happened on my turn, but that's fine. Or after my turn.
Unfortunately, the poison courses its way through your body, and luckily you're rooted in place because you go limp entirely, whoosh, paralyzed, and you're just standing there like Michael Jackson, kind of leaning forwards. And and then the grell is attached to you and begins pecking into you as it now has you restrained and paralyzed. Now it can feast upon you and it's going to be more damage. It tries to gnaw away at your...
Help.
Go on.
Oh, I just said help.
Help.
That's all.
It's only 9. It can't quite gnaw through. You can tell it's confused because you're not as fleshy as its usual prey. But you are restrained by the grell and paralyzed. That may have an effect on you and your turn. The first person to act would be Sola. Now, at the start of your turn, I think you can roll to try... So at the end of your turn, you can try and roll to get out of this paralysis. But I need
Wait,
to
roll... I forgot I got to roll twice last time. But
that's true. That's very
now.
True. It's still a
Sorry.
Fail.
That's, yep, extra fail. So I... This can either be roll one or roll one of the next one or what have you. Wow. What?
Still paralyzed.
11
is the DC.
Ugh.
So
it's not that bad of a con save. I mean, it's not good, but yeah.
I know, right? So at the end of your turn, you will come out of this paralysis and get a grip back into life. That's lucky for you, because I'm going to need you to roll a dexterity saving throw to remain rooted into the deck itself, or risk getting dragged away by the jet stream.
This would have been so different if it had literally happened one turn order lower. Everything would have changed, but
well,
so it goes. Yeah. All right, just regular dex save.
Dex save, yeah. Natural 20. Of course it is. Oof. You're so rooted in, and normally it should be like an automatic fail because you're restrained and stuff, but because it's a nat 20, you're dug in, rooted in, and the grell still remains holding on to you. And at the end of your turn, you just, eyes light up, sparks appear back on you, and you are no longer poisoned by it. It
looks like it.
Yosadiah, with a grell wrapped around you, it is your turn.
All right, so Yosadiah pulls out his trusty rapier.
Well, that's it not kind true. Of... You didn't get hit, nope. Did you? So you're actually okay.
Yeah, it's like, I was good there. Josiah pulls out his trusty rapier. Everyone sees it kind of light up a little bit with lightning as he slashes, or it's a rapier. He more stabs it at this creature in front of him as he attempts to booming blade it. That's a 26 to hit him.
Yeah, the ground the one that's right next to you, kind of sliding on top, like stuck to the side of the ship as it's the wind's battering against it. You slam into it with the rapier.
All right, so it'll take 9 piercing.
Yep.
Plus 7 thunder.
Yep, that's decent. 16 points of damage already.
And then I kind of look at it and I look towards Solar, and I feel we need to protect the vein here, and I'm going to misty step closer to him.
Yeah, you disappear. And in a puff of mist, you arrive next to Solar. The growl that you've just stabbed, having come loose and tried lunge for you, just goes whoosh and just whooshes past, hits another Sky Dwarf on the way and just takes him with you.
It takes another 12 thunder damage.
Yeah, it goes explodes as Sky Dwarf and Grau explode in the distance. But you are right next to Solar. Perfect.
Hello.
Is that the end of your turn?
Oh, you're okay. That will end my turn, yeah.
So in that case, Matilda, in the wheelhouse of the ship, you're restrained by the Grau, but you can still speak, of course.
Mm-hmm.
What would you say in this instance? You've got Shirelle right there. They have a choice. Continue steering the ship or save you?
Shirelle, keep the wheel.
Are you sure you've got hold of it?
How dare you? Matilda was going to do Vaguely Noble ship to try and catch some of her falling crew members, but Solar Alacrity and Tempest and Yosadiah and Zach are all more important. Crew is expendable, so she's not going to do that.
That comes from the intercom, and all the crew are like, what?
Yeah, I was going to say, acting captain, first off to a good start.
I'm kidding.
Greater good. Solar still has 2 on them, right?
Solar, one of them whoosh, just whisked off. But one of them is still wrapped around. Yeah, Grell is wrapped around him or them. It's also one around Tempest, I believe, and one around Zach. And one around you as well.
Let's see. Yeah, logic wins. Solar is irreplaceable. I am going to... They're more than 30 feet away, right? Maybe, please? Actually, it doesn't matter. I've already got disadvantage. So
yeah,
what's the worst that can happen?
Yeah.
She said...
2 nat ones.
Don't.
36.
That was with disadvantage, I think, because I already had that selected, but I can roll again.
Normally it rolls twice.
Cool. I'm not used to roll 20. Let's roll again. It does a 26 hit.
imagine disadvantage.
26 at disadvantage.
Does 26 hit.
This is my +2 pistol. Yeah. Cool. So then... I would like to hit it with some shooty damage.
Okay, question. Is this loaded with a normal bullet fired by black rock like gunpowder, or is it loaded?
So, Tilda doesn't have bullet in her pistol. The pistol is really a refining system for her own power. She realized a while ago that she can manipulate lightning, and Advisor Tawny showed her how to harness that and shoot it with finesse, using a pistol as a training aid, pretty much. So the lightning is coming from her hand. It is funneled and amplified through the pistol.
Perfect. So 2 bolts fire out. They hit. So it's 1 bolt, isn't it? Yeah. 1
yes.
Bolt. Hits this grill. Is it you doing the one on Solar?
Yes, the one on Solar. So 10 damage to start.
Perfect. 10 damage to start is always a good thing to hear as a DM.
And then I'll attack again, please.
Yeah, of course.
With disadvantage, that's 28.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, then.
Really sorry.
Oh, it's all good.
I'm not that sorry.
It's awesome.
So then, damage. Did that roll damage? That did another 12 damage.
12 points of this lightning energy slams into this girl that's around Solar, and you can see it's just sparking all around. There's burn marks on this brain that is wrapping around Solar.
It's still alive.
Unfortunately, it is still alive, yeah. It's
gripping
then, on.
I think I'm going to burn my action surge, because Solar is really very important. And do I get one more shot? I haven't played a fighter
before. You get one
before.
More attack.
One more, so I get 2 more.
Yeah, one more attack action, which is 2 attacks.
Great. I will go quickly, so I'm not taking up too much time.
No rush.
If you're doing that much damage, take as much time as you want.
Well, let me monologue for a while. So the first one is a 20, non-nat if that hits.
Yeah. And it's a filthy, dirty 20.
Was that also
such
with
a dirty 20? Yep.
Yep. And 23.
And 23.
Compare that to all the advantage rolls I just made that were just with advantage to try and save against poison.
It's wow.
Truly incredible.
I told you, Matilda is so respected in the military of the Stormcats.
And that's another 31 points of damage, so that's 53 damage total, please.
How does the creature die?
Can the lightning sort of enter somewhere central and then fork out so that every facet of it is streaked with lightning and then explodes?
Yeah, perfect. You just see this. At first, Solo, as it's wrapped around you, you just see this electric shards or static fly all around it, and then seemingly nothing. And then as it opens its beak, this lightning just goes and just explodes and just covers you in a mass of pink bubblegum-like liquid.
And then please, can it be canon? Tilda looks cool.
Very cool.
I don't have a bonus action. Really cool. So my bonus action is I pose.
Perfect. Pose, looking cool with your gun, as a grail is wrapped around you like...
Eye contact with Tempest, like, yeah.
Yeah, Solo Alacrity turns to Matilda and just says, I see that in this time, the Storm Heralds are also formidable.
Yes.
You never thought it would be possible for the famed and feared Matilda Pennywhistle to blush, but you swear you see it.
Just a bit. He's got a very high pass perception, so... Perfect.
Great. That was
so fun. Tempest, on your turn, you are restrained by a growl, but you've just seen Matilda decimate one. Your turn.
I would like to ask a question before we proceed, because I do have Skirmisher.
Okay.
And I didn't know how that would interact with the grapple that I have right now, because it says you can move up to half your speed as a reaction when an enemy ends its turn within 5 feet of you without provoking opportunity attacks.
Your movement is zero, so if half your movement speed is zero, then it's still zero, I'm afraid, while you're restrained.
Okay, so regardless, apologies, I asked that in the wrong way, but I see what you mean, DM. So with that, I will try to get out of the grapple.
Perfect. So that is a strength saving throw, or athletics attempt, I don't know, I always rule it wrong. Josh. What's the actual ruling on it? It's just a saving throw, isn't it?
Whatever you want it to be.
Yes, whatever you want it to be. Normally athletics.
I decree that it's a saving throw.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good and great.
I do what I want.
14.
Unfortunately, you're like, trying to break free, and it's just like, tentacles wrapped around you and remains restrained.
Shoot. Well, that ends my turn.
That's your action to do that. If you have any bonus actions, you can still do them.
Only to disengage or hide, and it'll be a little bit hard to do so in the wrapped in the arm of some tentacles. So, I'll end my turn.
Perfect. And then, okay, that means it is Zach's turn.
You said it's an action for us to try and get out of this grapple, didn't you?
Yeah.
I would like to attempt to get out of the grapple, please.
Then, of course, you can use your action to do exactly that.
That's a 16.
16 passes. You break free from its tentacles. It is no longer restraining you, which means it's loose and it goes whoosh, and it's launched away by the winds as the fast.
If I grab it just before it flies off.
Yeah, you grab its tentacles.
What I'd like to do is I'd like to grab it, wrap my arm around the harness that I'm on, grab it as it's going to fly away, and I'll use my action surge to spin it around my head and lob it straight towards the one that's attached to Tempest to try and knock it off of her.
You're going to use an enemy as an improvised weapon.
Yes.
It's been done before, so that's totally fine. Then make a ranged attack, but since you're not proficient, I guess, at using a growl as a weapon, it would just be your dexterity bonus rather than proficiency as well.
I'll use my strength because I'm lobbing it with everything I have.
Yes, you may.
Thank you. So just a strength, just straight up strength. That's a 19. Perfect.
Of course. So as you're holding this, as it tries to fly away, or it's just caught by the jet stream, you're like, whoosh, whoosh, and throw it towards the growl that's wrapped around Tempest. And it will hit. Of course it will hit. And there's two now growls that slam into this. The jet stream carries them at such pelting speed with your strength as well. They both hit. The problem is they let go. They let go of Tempest and they fly off. But also, Tempest, whatever you're holding onto, you also let go of because you're still paralyzed. And I should have actually made you do a saving throw. But you get dragged away and your tether is now taut as you are hanging off the side, or literally held on to the ship by your tether. And at that point, we'll take our 5-minute break.